When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Telegraph. The Telegraph. Podcasts.
It's December 2020, and here we are again at Hong Kong Airport. Leaving Hong Kong is a bit of a theme. Beijing's national security law has meant that for thousands of people, it's no longer desirable or safe to stay in the city. Still, politician Ted Hui had vowed to remain, to keep fighting for his home, for what he believed in. It wasn't until he was being interrogated by a senior immigration officer at the airport that he found himself wondering if he ought to leave for good. He was trying to go to Denmark for a work trip.
They put all the papers before me and asked me to show them all the documentations, COVID tests, and invitation letters, and then the chief officer of the immigration office was like lecturing me for 30 minutes, warning me and almost threatening me, you are allowed to go to Copenhagen only for official meetings, not for any other purposes, and you're not allowed to go anywhere else. And remember, and your return date should be this and that, and you should obey the laws. I wasn't a criminal. I was a person with a public mandate.
This treatment didn't surprise him. He had already been harassed for months, arrested multiple times. He was also facing at least 9 charges and had to secure court approval to leave Hong Kong. Authorities weren't going to let him go anywhere for any reason or any length of time all that easily.
But I held my temper. I said, okay. And then there's nothing they could do but just to let me go.
Eventually, Ted was allowed to board. A few hours later, he landed in Denmark. But back home, the crackdown was worsening. Ted had to decide on a dime. Would he return after this trip, or would he go into self-imposed exile? The best thing, he figured, was to stay out and get his family out, too. But if the authorities caught wind of what he was planning, what would happen to his wife and 2 children? Could they leave safely? China has a history of punishing the relatives of dissidents.
It was a very intense and nervous 2 days because my family had to be assured that I was safe. And there's no chance that anyone can extradite me back to China or Hong Kong. And so they packed their stuff and they went to the airport. We were texting each other constantly to ask them whether they were followed and would they be prosecuted and would they be stopped during their journey to the airport.
It was agonizing. At long last, he got the text he had been waiting for. They had landed safely in the UK. He could breathe again. It was a narrow escape.
In Hong Kong, more than 50 people have been arrested in a massive crackdown on the pro-democracy movement. They were detained for allegedly violating controversial national security legislation Beijing imposed on the city over the summer. Today's arrests are the most significant action authorities have taken.
Just weeks later, in January 2021, more than 50 pro-democracy politicians and activists were arrested in dawn raids. The mass arrests targeted almost every major remaining voice of dissent: veteran lawmakers, civil society figures, journalists, lawyers, a former intensive care nurse. Ted would almost certainly have been among them had he stayed. Most were charged with the same thing: subversion, the crime of undermining the Chinese state. Beijing's message was crystal clear: bow down or pay the price.
I forewarn those radicals not to attempt to violate this law because the consequences are very serious.
People are being arrested and journalists are being oppressed. The threat is very real.
You never know who will report you or denounce you.
Such a beautiful and wonderful city being dismantled by this terrible regime just for their obsession on power, total control.
It was traumatic. A lot of people were scarred by that. And I was one of them.
For those who tasted police brutality, for those who sniffed tear gas, they'll come back and people will rise again in the future.
I'm Sophia Yan, China correspondent for The Daily Telegraph. And you're listening to Hong Kong Silenced, a show about a city turned upside down. That mass arrest in early January was alarming. The city's last opposition figures were facing prison time. The government had squeezed out any space for resistance on the streets, in politics, in the media. But the Chinese Communist Party didn't stop there. Now it wanted to reach behind closed doors, into people's private conversations, into their minds. That same month, Hong Kong's government employees were sent a form to sign.
It says, I declare that as a civil servant of the government of the Hong Kong Special Administrative Regions of the People's Republic of China, I will uphold the basic law, bear allegiance to the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region of the Hong
Kong. It was a loyalty pledge.
And when you sign that agreement, that means a lot of things, right? That means that you might not be able to say anything freely at your workplace. If you don't agree with the government or if you don't support the national security law, then you are not following what they want you to do. And then they can fire you. That's the agreement. It forces a lot of civil servants to not say anything that doesn't support the national security law, to not say anything that may harm the government.
That's Christine, a 30-something civil servant. I should tell you that Christine is not her real name. In fact, giving this interview was so risky for her, given her job, that that's not even her real voice. All I can really say to protect her identity is that she works for the Hong Kong government. Loyalty pledges are common in China, though that wasn't the case before in Hong Kong. But this new oath applied to all civil servants, just about anyone linked to the government, census workers, even journalists at the public broadcaster. For Christine and her colleagues, some of whom had supported the pro-democracy protests, it posed a major dilemma.
You feel like, okay, if I sign it, that means I have to support the national security law and the government in many different ways. Then I started to think, okay, if I don't sign it, what will happen to me? I will have to quit my job and find another one, which could take like 1 or 2 months, and I will have to inform my family. I had a chat with one of my colleagues, and we were like, there is no choice, right? What other jobs can give us the same salary? How can we find another job with COVID going on and the state of Hong Kong's economy? So in the end, I signed it.
Not everyone made the same decision. And it was around this time that Christine noticed a small number of people at work were leaving and never coming back.
No one actually says that they are quitting because of the national security law. It just happens like 1 or 2 months after it. We know that they didn't sign the loyalty pledge form, but that's it.
A bold handful returned the form, unsigned, with a message scrawled on it. This violates my right to free speech. These holdouts were rare. The government said that less than 1% of Hong Kong's 170,000 civil servants dared to refuse to sign the pledge.
I think it's really about sacrifice. And if you don't want to sacrifice your freedom of speech, then you just have to think whether or not you're going to quit your job or not. For me, I feel like there's no choice.
Christine hoped that would be the end of it, an unsettling development that amounted to insidious bureaucracy and wouldn't impact her day-to-day too much. But Christine was wrong.
When I first joined the government, some of my colleagues told me, oh, you might have to be careful when you are saying things in front of this person or when talking about political things. But after we signed the loyalty pledge, you basically have to be cautious about anything. Even on social media, like on your Facebook account, about whether or not you're going to comment, whether or not you're going to like a Facebook page that supports the protests, even for what you wrote on social media before you joined the government. Because it still shows your perspective, right?
She was even nervous visiting restaurants and shops that supported the pro-democracy protests would mean consequences.
It's kind of like white terror. If there are colleagues that really hate you and they see you in a restaurant that used to be pro-democracy and they really support the government, they could report you for violating the agreement that you have signed.
In other words, Christine now felt her every word and movement was being scrutinized for the slightest sign that she wasn't 100% loyal to Beijing.
The Public Officers Candidacy and Taking of Offices Miscellaneous Amendments Bill 2021. We have with us Secretary.
A month later, in February 2021, a new loyalty pledge was announced for all politicians, even those only thinking of running. It was part of a controversial bill intended to ensure that only patriots could be in positions of power in Hong Kong. This is how the government explained who would be considered a patriot.
If you claim to be patriotic and yet you don't respect or even try to sabotage the basic characteristics of our country's system, that is a system led by the Communist Party of China, that would not be acceptable. You can't say I'm patriotic, but I don't respect, you know, the fact that it is the Chinese Communist Party which, you know, leads the country.
Let's pause here for a second and address the elephant that's been in the room since the beginning of the show. The Chinese Communist Party. One of the biggest political parties in the world with more than 92 million members. That means in China, one person out of every 15 is in the party. And the party sits at the very heart of our story. To give us the lowdown, here's Rana Mitter, director of the University of Oxford's China Center. He's here to tell us the history of the CCP in just 1 minute. Clock starting now.
A dozen young men gathered in secret in Shanghai in July 1921. The founders of the Chinese Communist Party, a ragtag gathering that will become a machine ruling a quarter of humanity. The war against Japan in the 1940s saw the rise of Mao Zedong, the charismatic and ruthless figure who would lead the party to victory at the end of the Civil War in 1949. His rule saw China's global influence grow, but also disasters at home such as the violent Cultural Revolution, in which as many as 2 million people died. Mao's eventual successor, Deng Xiaoping, undertook one of the boldest economic experiments in history, allowing markets to let rip and creating astonishing growth rates. But hopes that a richer China would become more liberal were dashed in 1989, when hundreds, perhaps thousands of demonstrators were killed by order of the state during what's often called the Tiananmen Square Massacre. Today's leader, Xi Jinping, has abolished term limits and challenges the liberal world on everything from human rights to territorial boundaries. In his China, the number one value is loyalty to the party above all else.
Okay, slightly more than a minute, but you get the idea. The Chinese Communist Party's authority hasn't always been welcome in Hong Kong, in part because the city became a refuge for people fleeing famine and brutality under Chairman Mao. For years, Beijing tolerated the dissent. But all that changed with the mass protests in summer 2019. The sheer scale of the movement, coupled with demands for broad democratic reforms, posed a major challenge to Beijing. It was embarrassing to have such public disapproval of Xi's leadership. So he decided to stamp it out, once and for all. The national security law, the arrests, the loyalty pledges, everything seemed designed to scare people into conforming. A hotline was set up for people to snitch on colleagues, friends, or family members who said anything deemed to be unpatriotic. The chilling effect was far-reaching. Coming up after the break.
She can't trust anybody. She can't trust her classmates. She doesn't know what consequence she may face if she says something bad about the government or criticize the policy.
Don't go away.
Hi, my name's Venetia Rainey. I'm the writer and producer of Hong Kong Silenced, which means I've spent months working out exactly how China's tightened its grip on the city over the past 12 months. It also means I get to give a voice to people who've been silenced, people like Sarah, Ted, Brian, and Florence. But doing justice to their stories, as I hope we've done on this podcast, takes time, and that's where our subscribers come in. Without their contribution, we can't make shows like this one. So if you'd like to support what we're doing and to get unlimited access to a huge range of journalism on foreign affairs, politics, sport, business, culture and more, go to telegraph.co.uk/silenced, where you can get 30 days free access to The Telegraph. After that, it's just £2 a week. That's telegraph.co.uk/silenced, or click on the link in the episode description.
By early 2021, people were starting to feel the pressure of the national security law in every part of Hong Kong life, including Florence, the nurse who helped injured protesters in 2019 and was at the siege at the Chinese University of Hong Kong.
Although the government always said that the national security law is targeted a small group of politically active person, but for the society, no one believes so. We saw those health workers in the Cathay Pacific. After they post some opinions on the social media, they got fired. So we all think that when the national security law comes, it will happen to different sectors.
Speaking freely was already tricky for health workers. Beijing was extraordinarily sensitive about the portrayal of the origins of the COVID pandemic and its handling of the outbreak. But after the national security law was introduced, things became even more difficult. Florence and her colleagues couldn't even push against little things, like swab samples being sent to the mainland for testing rather than being done locally.
So when we criticize about that, the chief executive, Carrie Lam, said that those kind of criticism is trying to destroy the good relationship between the mainland and Hong Kong, and also have implications of national security. As a healthcare workers, especially our more vocal healthcare workers like me, we all know that from the experience from mainland China, comments about many public health issues can be national security problems in the official eyes.
There were rumors that the loyalty oath might be expanded to other professions, including the judiciary and even the health sector. Florence was vehemently against it.
As a professional, we are not someone who are making political decisions why we need to take part in that loyalty bridge.
Sarah, the young woman we've been following from the start of the series, had a slightly different perspective. She figured most people would just sign the pledge because they felt there was no other option, not because they actually agreed with the content. For her, it was essentially meaningless. Sarah had become fairly fatalistic about Hong Kong.
I'm quite a person with negative thinking when it comes to political issues.
But she was also pretty brave. You might even say cavalier, and refused to give in to fear. She refused to be silenced.
We knew some colleagues that were pro-government, but we didn't care. We just, when we chat, we just say whatever we wanted. We know that like there's a possibility of people reporting our opinions, what we said, to the National Security Department or something like that. But if I, as a regular person, regular citizen in Hong Kong, would get charged on this kind of thing, just based on my speech, then so be it. There's no way to avoid altogether, right? You just choose to like completely shut up, or you just be yourself, right?
Instead, she and her colleagues relied on humor to cope with the tense situation.
we didn't take it seriously. And we would like every day we make it as a joke, like, oh, you're not patriotic enough. You don't love the country enough. You are not Chinese. And, oh, I'm going to report to National Security Department or something like that. We would joke about it.
We have been more sarcastic when we talk about political related stuff. We will say, like, follow the party, follow the communists. We will say that. We know that that's what, like, the government wants to hear. But, like, it's obviously we mean the opposite. It feels like it has become our day-to-day life to laugh about our situation. But it's just another chapter of the fall of Hong Kong.
If you were to divide the fall of Hong Kong, as Sarah describes it, into chapters, it's this next one that's arguably the most sinister. So far, the main focus of Beijing's crackdown targeted adults in Hong Kong, people who were old enough to understand what was going on, form their own opinions, and make conscious decisions about how to react. But then the Chinese Communist Party turned its attention to a whole new group, Hong Kong's school children.
We are still young. How can we contribute to our society and country?
In February 2021, the government introduced an entirely new curriculum about national security. It was promoted in an unusual animated video narrated by an owl, released in both English and Mandarin.
Let's learn about national security.
Mr. Owl, what is national security?
In it, a rather stern Mr. Owl gives a young boy and girl a lesson about the importance of the national security law.
Every one of us loves Hong Kong, our home.
We all hope that our families and people around us can lead a happy and stable life.
For the sake of Hong Kong's continuous development and long-term prosperity, the national security law has been enacted.
Mr. Owl explains that it covers, well, just about anything,
including economic, technological, cyber, social, ecological security, and so on.
He gives a pretty technical explanation, which is odd, given this video is supposed to be for children.
National security law, a national law, has been listed in Annex 3 to the Basic Law, according to Article 18 of the Basic Law, and applied by way of promulgation.
Then the young girl asks a question.
With the national security law, we can still freely voice our opinions, right?
Of course. The national security law only punishes an extremely small minority of criminals, protects the vast majority of Hong Kong residents, and maintains the law and order of Hong Kong. The legitimate rights and freedoms enjoyed by Hong Kong residents, such as the freedom of the press, of speech, of procession, of association, of assembly, and of demonstration, will not be affected.
Classic propaganda. Mr. Owl throws in a classroom-appropriate anecdote just for a good measure.
Imagine if some students did whatever they wanted in the school, like skipping classes and running around here and there. What would the lesson be like?
Everyone could hardly focus on learning, and there would even be accidents.
Law and order trumps freedom and individual rights, in other words. The plan was for lessons about the importance of national security to be woven into the curriculum. Beijing wanted to make sure future generations were malleable and wouldn't organize protests. And liberal studies, a mandatory civics course that encouraged students to debate political, cultural, and social issues, was axed. But the merits of the national security law were not up for debate. For teachers who believed developing critical thinking was a tenet of a proper education, it came as a big shock. Mr. Wong was one of them. He's taught liberal studies to high schoolers for a decade.
I think eventually there will be no room for discussion as the changes tend towards an indoctrination style of education. But if you want students to understand the issue of national security thoroughly, shouldn't schools be providing different viewpoints? For example, we teach students to abide by the law. But what about disputes in society over the law's execution? Where the boundaries are and why the authorities can decide whatever they want, can we discuss these controversial topics? I believe that the students also have these questions in mind. But all this seems to be taboo under the new Education Bureau's guidelines, which is very unhealthy in education.
Beijing has long sought to control what's taught in Hong Kong classrooms. and Hong Kongers have always pushed back. But now, because the changes were under the guise of national security, no one could do anything about it. There was even talk of installing CCTV cameras in classrooms to ensure teachers didn't overstep so-called red lines. Mr. Wong worried where it would all lead.
I think there is now an internal struggle for teachers. What should we as teachers do? Will we become tools for promoting politics? I think the whole society is worried that will happen. Education should be open and free, but the room for discussion is becoming so limited now. For example, we cannot discuss Hong Kong independence anymore. Will we eventually only be left with one option? To teach our students to praise the government? More and more red lines keep being added. We have to ask ourselves, what is education?
Reforms to the city's curriculum were marked a few months later in one of Beijing's more bizarre propaganda projects, the snappily named National Security Education Day. Activities included rocket launcher demos, soldiers taking down terrorists in mock drills, an online quiz competition, and selfies with a giant bear dressed in a police uniform. Oh, and you could also buy plastic toys of riot police officers holding shotguns. Even kids in kindergarten were involved. Children so young they couldn't write the characters for national security, let alone understand what it meant.
During the National Security Day, my daughter brought her stickers about national security from school to home. And I asked her whether she knew what it is, and she said no. She even didn't notice the teachers have put the stickers into her school bag. Actually, I quite feel shocked about that time because I think she's so small. She's just 4 years old. She had no idea what national security was.
Maggie is a 30-something stay-at-home mother with a 4-year-old little girl. She's also pregnant. She talked to us near a playground in a park in Hong Kong while her daughter was at school. On the weekends, Maggie and her family love hiking in the hills around Hong Kong or swimming at the beach. But she was troubled by the new curriculum to be taught from the age of 6.
I think it's too young for them to learn such things because they don't have critical thinking. They just remember or recite what the teachers teach them. And for me, I think it's kind of brainwashing, and they force them to believe what the government want them to believe.
She was also concerned about the growing emphasis on loyalty.
The government promote the people to report any so-called crimes for destroying the community or harming the government. I don't really feel safe if my daughter studies in such environment because she can't trust anybody. She can't trust her classmates. She doesn't know what consequence she may face if she says something bad about the government or criticize the policy.
It wasn't just her daughter she was concerned about. She and her friends had also been feeling the pressure under the national security law.
For example, on IG or Facebook, I used to retweet many news, political news or local news. But now I'm not dare to do so because I don't know who are reading my IG or Facebook and who will report me. For example, you can't do something to cause the hatred among the community. But it's very subjective. Like, I criticize the government on Facebook. Do you regard me as causing the hatred? That's what I feel sad because I have quite a lot of friends who are teachers and they have censored themselves as well. They don't talk much about society or even the very normal social incidents in Hong Kong. They just don't talk in the class. Before, they may have some students, their Facebook friends, they have to unfollow all of them because you never know who will report you, who will denounce you.
This sort of self-censorship is one of the most disturbing aspects of the national security law's effect on Hong Kongers. The law is so vague, so broad, that nobody knows exactly where the lines are. So they self-censor, just in case. Uncertainty like this can be brutally effective. No police warnings or official government policies needed. Remember Tony, the journalist we met earlier in this series? He found himself avoiding certain subjects, even though no one had told him to.
Personally, I'm trying not to touch on any sensitive political issues right now because, you know, nobody knows for sure what the national security law is going to be.
This was happening all over the city. For example, two major universities prematurely cut ties with their own elected student union bodies after they made statements that could be considered in violation of the law. The students weren't even facing any charges. Even lawyers, people you'd think would understand the national security law best, they weren't sure just how broadly it would be applied. Patrick, not his real name, is a barrister in Hong Kong.
Most of my criminal work are not NSL related, and so I still cannot tell. Yeah, but I can see that some lawyers would have reservation on taking on NSL related cases. One can see that we still have to study into this national security law because there's no case law, no precedent. We really don't know what that is. Maybe it's because of this uncertainty, people are acting more cautiously, not to infringe or not to violate any potential, you know, provision in the national security law.
But back to the park and Maggie. Because amid all of this growing uncertainty, there were parents like her just trying to raise their children and give them the best life possible. As for activist Nathan Law and politician Ted Hui, for Maggie, this increasingly meant one thing: leaving Hong Kong.
We're actually doing research on migration, seriously, because I didn't see any future of the kids in Hong Kong, and I don't really feel safe to stay here when she grew up. I feel so sad, really, because, yes, I raised here, and I love Hong Kong, the old Hong Kong, I mean. We had so much good time here, and I studied to local schools here, and my family and friends are here, too. So it's not an easy decision to migrate because I have to sacrifice all the things. But we are quite determined to do that because we want to give a better future, a safe place for my kids to grow up.
For Maggie, the hardest part would be leaving behind her parents. Under Chairman Mao, they fled from mainland China to Hong Kong, to safety. But they don't speak English and don't want to start all over again.
They prefer staying in Hong Kong. They're old, and I want to take care of them, but I just can't bring them with us.
Her parents were disturbed by what was happening to Hong Kong. It felt terrifyingly familiar.
They were quite upset and quite angry. They came to Hong Kong during the Cultural Revolution because my granddad was a principal of the school. So he was denounced at that time. And my mom's dad, who was the landlord, and he was denounced as well. So that's why both parents came to Hong Kong to escape from the CCP government. And now they felt the same, just like the hands are intervening in Hong Kong. And that's what may happen to their grandchildren. So actually, they always encourage us to leave.
For Maggie's family, the past and present were slowly joining up. All across the city, regular Hong Kongers were feeling choked at the throat. The mass exodus had begun. Next time on Hong Kong Silenced.
For those who tasted police brutality, for those who sniffed tear gas, they wouldn't forget, I'm sure. And they'll come back and people will rise again in the future.
The crackdown starts to seep into cinemas, churches, and courtrooms, and we ask what the future might hold for Hong Kong. You've been listening to Hong Kong Silenced with me, Sophia Yan, China correspondent for The Telegraph. The show was reported by me and Nicholas Smith. It was written and produced by Venetia Rainey and produced and sound designed by Leanne Coyle at Whistledown Productions, with additional audio gathering and translation from Jasmine Leong. It was mixed by Tom Brignall. The commissioning editors are Theodora Leloudis and Jess Winch. Follow this feed on your podcast app to make sure you don't miss an episode. And if you're enjoying the series, leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find this show.